Today is May 1st, 2015, and I am Deborah Schwartz. I'm sitting here with Matthew Davis, longtime resident of Mill Valley. And Matthew, thank you so much for allowing me to interview you on behalf of the Historical Society. Why don't we begin with you telling me a little bit about yourself, perhaps you know a little bit about your family, and what brought you here to Mill Valley.
All right. I was born in Lincoln, Nebraska, I have no memory of that at all. We moved to Oregon when I was a baby, so my first experiences were mountains, living in mountains in Oregon, both east and west of Eugene. And later on, we moved to a small farm town near Portland. There was Mount Hood to the east, there was Mount St. Helens to the north, and Mount Adams to the south, and the Gresham Butte nearby, which as a kid we could hike on. When I went to University of Oregon a couple of years and then decided to go on active duty in the Navy. During that time, I was fortunate to have some time in Japan. I became sort of intrigued by Buddhist temples and very intrigued by Japanese country dwellings and farms and gardens and so forth. I wasn't a typical sailor at all. I would get off the ship and walk straight for the country, and in 4 or 5 blocks I would be free of all bars and things like that, out where old gentlemen would bow to me, and I felt like a guest there.
What year would this be, approximately?
This was 1955. About 1957.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was fortunate also, it was the peacetime Navy, and my dormant ability to write and edit things put me in good stead. I became a journalist. And part of that was to design a big cruise book, like think of like a big college yearbook, but this was a cruise book of a big aircraft carrier. And doing that work, I employed the talent of a sailor who was a little older, who had a mother in San Francisco. That mother knew the Dimitrovs in Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to the University of Oregon a year, and then got enticed to come to the Bay Area, and lived in a little house way high in Point Richmond, looking across the whole bay, especially looking across to Marin County and Mount Tamalpais. Every sunset there was the mountain. And I started working, doing yard work for people. But the mother of the sailor took a liking to me. She had two other sons. Well, she had one other son besides the one I met in the Navy. And she said, "You want some part-time work? Why don't you go see my friends the Dimitrovs in Mill Valley?" Yeah. I didn't know anything about Mill Valley.
How long is that? That Dimitrovs is the frame shop in town. Do you know when that frame shop opened? I mean, it's been I had no idea it had been around so long.
Yeah. The last Historical Review has a nice article by Sita Melchuk, their daughter,
mm-hmm.
on how the Dimitrovs came to Mill Valley. So mm-hmm. it would specifically mention when they came to Mill Valley.
Okay.
It hadn't been all that long. Mm-hmm. When I came to work, it was actually located in the Bank of America building.
Mm. On Throckmorton.
Yeah.
When
you look at the bank, if you're standing in front of the entrance, there's windows to the left. Those windows used to be a doorway into Dimitrov's art store, which sold art materials and did framing. So there was a big workshop behind the retail part, and the Dimitrovs were very open and warm people, and they in effect became my California parents. When I got married, they came all the way up to Mendocino to be at our wedding, and they would invite me to dinners which had other guests like Alan Watts, and it was a happy circumstance to be there.
Alan Watts.
I hadn't done framing except to try to put together some of my own things, and Steve Dimitrov said, I want you to forget everything you know and just learn it my way. That's the Dimitrov personality coming forth. Anyway, when I went, got married, saved money, and my wife Suki and I took a long trip to Mexico and Western Europe. We were gone for 6 months. When I came back, I still had a job at Dimitrov's.
So this is now into the 50s still?
It's about 62, 63 by that time, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I felt pretty... I liked Mill Valley, I liked the people, how... It was a very different town then, that after the commuters would go to work in San Francisco, it would get very quiet during the day.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a few housewives around. I had a chance to buy the property we're on now. We'd lived in a chicken shack on the front of the lot before we went to Europe. And then it was 20 by 20 feet.
You and Suki lived in the chicken shack?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when we came back, it was occupied by somebody else. Pretty soon, the owner called me up and offered. She was disgruntled at dealing with younger people who weren't so responsible and so forth. And she offered to sell it to me, sell this lot. So the chicken shack was on the front, and the whole, most of the rest of the lot was jungle growth, which we set about slowly clearing away. And today we have all this garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I started digging a foundation for this house. Let me say, I had started studying architecture at the U of O.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't a stranger to designing houses. And also, along with framing, I would once in a while work for people like Al Kleiss, who's a third generation builder here in Mill Valley. And in fact, Al Kleiss helped me. He supervised the pouring of the foundation that day, which was a good thing he was there to do that, because it had to be pumped in and so forth. And so by that time we had two children in the 20 by 20 foot shack, and we started sleeping, as soon as we had a roof here, no walls, we started sleeping out here, just because we needed more space. So, it's one of the reasons it's very hard to think of ever leaving where I live, because I put so much sweat equity into it, and Suki has, she's a devoted gardener. In fact, when I crash in my bike, if without her there wouldn't have been a garden that year. And even now, I'm limited what I can do, so she works and works.
So you managed to move from the chicken coop into an actual home with your children, and then you eventually went back to the frame shop, yes?
Yeah, but I was already working back at the shop.
Oh, you were already working back.
Building part-time, mm-hmm. weekends and nights. Mm-hmm. This pine extravaganza here, these cabinets, mm-hmm. took a whole year to make all those things.
Well, this house is beautifully paneled. People listening aren't going to be able to see it, but I'll get a photograph of you and with all this beautiful wood. So you did, and your children went to school in Mill Valley, and tell me a little bit about the general ambiance of Mill Valley and what it is you liked about it or didn't like about the area.
Well, I'm not by nature a very critical or judgmental person, mm-hmm. but I don't remember at the beginning too much I didn't like. it was a friendly town, and I love the different valleys and canyons. It took me several years to learn, to even know about some of them existing. And then during all this time, I gradually became more and more enamored, you might say, of the mountain itself. Mm-hmm. Like, our oldest child is a girl. When she was 3 weeks old, we actually took her on a hike, carried her on the Matt Davis Trail.
Oh, that's something we probably should clarify.
Yeah,
your name and Matt Davis.
I'm not the Matt Davis.
Yeah, Matt Davis from the Samuel Pius Conservation Club, who I believe he died in 1938 or 9, and he was the dean of the Trail Builders, mm-hmm. as I say. And this is not you. You are a different Matthew Davis.
Right.
Yes.
In fact, I should mentioned that when I came to Mill Valley, I had a different first name of Dennis, and which I still use medically through the VA. I'm still Dennis because I never had a legal name change. But for probably 40 years, I've been known locally as Matthew Davis, and people who know me love that I have the same name as the trail.
Because you're such an avid outdoorsy,
yeah.
hiking guy.
And although I haven't been on that trail for quite a while, it was always one of my favorite.
I was just there 2 days ago.
Little chance.
Yesterday, actually. And it's as beautiful as ever, and Fat Solomon is blooming.
Mm.
And it smells fragrant. Well, it's almost done. But yes.
Mm.
Yes, so. But like Matt Davis, you enjoy the mountain and the hiking in the area.
And I've done a lot of trail work on the new part of the Matt Davis Trail particularly, but somewhat the old part. Somebody asked me the other day, how long since I'd walked the steep ravine, mm-hmm. or the Dipsy Trail. And, you know, just to set out and walk it, it's been years since I've done that. But then I helped maintain part of it. I helped build the new ladder that's part way down.
Oh, yeah, looking good. When was that built?
Maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes. Yes. So, have you been part of some of the hiking clubs or the conservation clubs?
Yeah, the Tamil Pines Conservation Club, mm-hmm. which has sort of come alive again. It's having its annual meeting on Sunday, mm-hmm. which I hope to get to. Mm-hmm.
So, how often were you hiking when you were with your young family? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get to is your experience with the mountain. You know, how it affects you, the relationship you have with it on a daily basis, weekly.
Well, it means a lot to me to look out and see it. Mm-hmm. From my bed, I can turn my head and see it. Whether I get on it or not, frequently, just to know that it's there. And to see it in different light conditions and different cloud conditions. It's no wonder it's such a well-loved place from all around the Bay Area. People come to, you might say, worship there, mm-hmm. to hike there.
So that brings us towards, you know, the religious, you could say, experience of being on the mountain for you, and obviously for lots of others, is your circumambulation. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that, how it came about.
Well, it came about because Gary Snyder, Allen Ginsberg, and Philip Whalen, I guess, I think it was mainly Gary Snyder's impetus, but he always gave credit to the other two. They joined together to, quote, open the mountain and do a walk on October 22nd, 1965, was their first formal circumambulation. And about after that, I guess Gary went to Japan again. When he came back, there was the Haight-Ashbury Times was being published, and there was a double page spread about a hike that was going to happen, a circumambulation of the mountain. And I was never a big formal practitioner of Buddhism, but always interested and intrigued and knew people who were, like Bill Kwan, now known as Jakusho Kwan, is the Roshi of the Sonoma Mountain Zen Center. He introduced me to Roshi Suzuki of the San Francisco Zen Center, and other people. There was one, the editor of Roshi Suzuki's book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, was Trudy Dixon, a woman of almost exactly our age, had children the age of our children, and lived just a short ways away here. So, I had this proclivity to, well, there was no way I was not going to go on that walk, mm-hmm. you might say. And several friends here also showed up. Maybe we even shared a car to get there, thinking of people like Albert Saijo, And that still it was a surprise because Joanne Tiger just hit upon this the other day at Commonweal. She was too young to have been a beatnik, but too old to have been a hippie.
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of in that same slot. Mm-hmm. So here's the circumambulation. The people that show up look like they're not a costume ball, but, you know, the women are mainly in long flowing dresses. They have ankle tricklets. There's flute music playing. There's definitely a flower child ambience there. Mm-hmm. And that was my introduction to hippies and the flower child era, you might say. Anyway, I love the circumambulation, the feeling of seeing the whole mountain in one day, and all these different vistas and angles, and the coming together as a group periodically to do chants. And so some of us there wanted to do it again, which we did a little over a year later with Allen Ginsberg and Philip Whalen. That was a huge circumambulation. Like, the water district has regulations now of not allowing groups over, I think, 19 people or 29 people. That group probably had 129 people in it, but that was before the regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, nobody cared. And after that walk, I don't know if Alan ever came again. I think Philip did. Gary did. Came several times. Bob Greensfelder was a homestead resident who definitely was part of it. He had been a Reed College student along with Gary and Philip. Anyway, people like Don Killian and Robin Collier and I and Bob Greensfelder wanted to make it more a part of our lives, not just to have it happen once a year, but maybe, hey, how about doing it every quarter, doing it on solstices and equinoxes, which we started out doing, but then it turned out people often had to work on the solstice and equinox, but if we did it on the Sunday closest to the solstice and equinox, it would work out. And so that now there's maybe, I mean, it's varied a lot during the year. During the years, according to weather and so forth, there's been times when myself and one other person did the walk, including Robin Collier and I did it during a lunar eclipse, a complete lunar eclipse. But now it's boiled down to maybe 30, 35 people who on any given time, maybe half of them will show up and do the walk. And it's a very bonding enterprise. When you get bonded to the mountain, you get bonded to each other. Some of us often have a meal together afterwards. So it became a really big part of my life. And my son Oren, all my children have done the walk, but Oren did it when he was 8 or 9 years old. And then when I suddenly was incapacitated by my bike accident, Oren stepped forward, and he had been coming sometimes, and he stepped forward, and he's led it ever since, and the feedback has been very good on his leading it. So I'm happy about that.
And when was your bike accident?
It was early March last year.
So Oren took over?
Right away. In 2 weeks there was a circumambulation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So you've been doing them 4 times a year for how many years before your accident?
Well, I'm not sure how many.
Rough guess is good.
Yeah, he probably did at least 20 over the years, mm-hmm. 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
He knew the way.
Yes, but how about you? How many do you think you've done?
Well, there's a woman, Laura Pettibone, who's, I think she's up, she counts about 160 she's done, and we figured out that when I stopped that maybe I was around 180.
Mm-hmm.
I have records, I could someday go over them and figure
close is good.
Not important.
No, it's not. It's not about that.
Right.
And so you can, in the book, you've written a book. Let's talk a little bit about the book you've written about your circumambulation. I've got it right here.
Yeah. It was fun to put this together. I've always sort of been enamored with putting out books, the few that I've done. But it was fun to do this and do the drawings. The drawings were all done this same day as a walk, which is why they're kind of simple.
Mm-hmm.
Broad line drawings, because I only had maybe 15 or 20 minutes to do each one and then catch up with the other hikers. I was very fortunate to have a good friend, Mike Scott. He and his wife, Vicky, had been coming on the walk, and Mike is he's a sociology professor, but he's also a very, very good photographer. he took all the pictures in there were by Mike.
So basically your book talks about, there's a foreword by Gary Snyder, right?
Yeah.
Yep, the poet. And it talks about how anybody could read this book and reproduce your early, you know, your experience with the prayers and
people have. I've been surprised by being told by people, oh yeah, we got together and we did the circumambulation.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of his name. Acupuncturist at Pine Street Clinic in
San Anselmo.
San Anselmo. They've actually sold copies of the book.
Really? As healing?
They've done the walk.
Think there's healing properties on Mount Tam?
Well, I think any time you get out in fresh air and have a reason to breathe deeply, mm-hmm. you're going to have healing. And mm-hmm. certainly the greenness and the flowers and the birds and everything are going to be very, very good for us suburban dwellers.
Do you have any special mountain experiences that have happened? I mean, you've spent a lot of time on the mountain. Have you had any adventures in particular you want to talk about?
Well, circumambulating at night which is probably very illegal to do, but it was during the lunar eclipse, was interesting. I think it was January 31st, and on the north side of the mountain, we had to deal with sheet ice on the ground.
Ooh.
And when we came down, Robin had one of his brothers, I think it was Vian, was a cross-country runner. And he joined us. He couldn't do the whole walk, but he joined us at Mountain Home.
Mm-hmm.
But then he stepped off the... By that time, the moon is in full eclipse,
mm-hmm.
and it's very dark in the woods, mm-hmm. and he stepped off the edge.
Where?
Stood down.
By the...
Somewhere down in the woods there.
Mm. That can be dangerous.
Yeah, I don't think... I personally have had any, quote, you know, adventure particularly. Just huge enjoyment and refreshment from doing it.
Any animal sightings to speak of?
No, never saw a cougar or...
Oh, wow.
I've heard about them around.
Mm-hmm.
Right here at Homestead, I was walking on the Homestead Trail through the woods, and I realized that something rather large had jumped off a branch, a horizontal branch,
mm-hmm.
about 20 feet from the trail. I turned to look, didn't see anything, but mm-hmm. the branch was still quivering.
That suggests weight.
So it could have just been a bobcat, I guess, but...
Could have been.
Which I have seen in Homestead Valley,
mm-hmm.
or bobcats. And of course, deer, we see deer going to the mailbox, though.
Mm-hmm.
And don't really, we saw a coyote up on the mountain once.
Hmm. I'm surprised you haven't seen more, honestly.
Yeah, I didn't mention walking quietly. At some point, I talk about this in the book. We decided to not talk as we climbed the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody loved it. But it does spook other hikers who are usually gabbing away as they walk along, and then all of a sudden there's 15 people next to them that they didn't have any idea were there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of amazed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's been... I don't know if that still happens or not, but...
Did Alan Watts ever circumambulate with you?
No, he wasn't... I don't think he was much of a hiker. Maybe... Oh, he took some walks out in Druid Heights, I'm sure. But he never... I'm not sure what the sequence was when the circumambulation started, whether he was still around or not.
Mm-hmm.
Allen Ginsberg wasn't a hiker either, but he did the walk. And my impression of him was that he would barely be able to make it to the next station, but at that station he would chant until he was revived.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd stride off forcefully to to continue.
Hmm. Do you, you've been working on the mountain with your, working on the trails and been very much part of the mountain itself. How do you see change on the mountain as far as usage and the way that people relate to it? Do you see anything different? Or
well, the usage has grown over the years. Some places are almost, seem like they're worn down somewhat. As far as out on the trails, I don't know how many people really get that much out on the trails. around Pantol or Gutjak or something, there's certainly heavy usage in any place that within a 50-100 feet of a car. off of Ridgecrest Boulevard. I mean, who can blame people? It's just so gorgeous up there. You get up there, and there's those knolls, and there's not even any trees blocking your view. You know, you're on top of the San Andreas Fault. Who can blame them for walking out into the grass and wearing it down? I do want to. It reminds me, though, that it more and more seems like a very, very special privilege to live here so close to the fault and so close to the mountain. And where one of the circumambulation stops is a serpentine field where the mountain changes direction, you might say. It had been running more or less east and west, and there it turns north.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who, if you read anything about geology and so forth, it's kind of amazing to live so close to a fault, a big fault as the San Andreas Fault. And then recent revelations of, I think, some school back in Pennsylvania, geology people came out and they determined that Tamalpais was formed by a blind thrust fault at right angles to the San Andreas Fault, which helped it for me to explain why, when most coast ridges run parallel to the coast, Tamalpais comes off at a right angle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the first mountain south of San Francisco, I can't think of the name of it, also is at a right angle. Anyway, the geology here is very intriguing and always a sense of wonder. Awe and wonder.
Have you studied a bit of geology? The rocks and...
I haven't studied it formally.
But, I mean, you're interested.
Whenever I see an article or something, I read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about the paths and lanes in the area? And the steps, paths and lanes in Mill Valley? The many paths and lanes we have that...
Well, that's one of the wonderful things about Mill Valley is that all these steps and lanes, and it saddens somebody who gets permission to block one off, but fortunately a lot of them are still open. And, I make use of one little one to go down to the store here in Homestead, but it's one of the neat things about Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And Mill Valley, Homestead actually has a whole trail called the Homestead Trail that runs through the woods. It's not lacking in walking capabilities. In fact, you can walk up Homestead Valley and go connect to the Dipsy up on Edgewood and follow that, or you can right from here, you can go up to Homestead Boulevard to the end and get on the Homestead Trail through the woods and come out more by on Diaz Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, at one time, I would walk to Green Gulch that way. It would take me an hour from above the Three Corner area. I would connect to an old cow trail that went down through the gulch. That was when there were still cows.
Yeah, I remember.
There had been cows there.
Yeah, up on
George Wheelwright's Angus. But gradually that's grown up. The last time I tried it, I never made it. Mm-hmm. I gave up. It was too thick and overgrown.
Do you, what are the people that you recall in this, you know, the years that you've lived here? Are there individuals that come to mind that in, you know, stand out for you, that very much made Mill Valley an experience or a home for you?
Well, one for sure was, I'm having trouble coming up with his name, Martin, who died about 4 or 5 years ago, was a, he lived in Homestead Valley, and he did pottery in his retirement. But he was a great enthusiast for the mountain and the Sierra, and he was a part of the Tamil Pious Conservation Club, and he had a very profound influence on me and my attitude towards the mountain and this mountain and the Sierra as well. Mm-hmm. He introduced me to the Tuolumne Poetry Festival, which I still go to. At least one more year, I think.
Mm-hmm. If you were to say anything to anybody, you know, that you would coming into our mountain about how you feel about it or the privilege and the responsibility of living in an area this unique and this beautiful, what would you say?
To introduce somebody to?
Yeah, or whatever information you would want to pass along to somebody coming here for the first time, or maybe they're moving to the town.
I just tell them to take a walk. And to take a walk with an open mind and no time limit on it. So maybe a wonderful quick introduction would be to drive up Summit Avenue and then forget what the street is.
Fern
Canyon?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Park there and look around and walk. walk up and around. Mm-hmm. There's various, I won't try to describe them, there's various loops you can do. Including the, visiting the site where the airplane crashed years ago.
Which is, on what trail is that?
Well, it's not on the trail.
Uh-huh.
The few parts of it are in one gully, but the main field of debris is off to the side. And there's a ranger, a water district ranger, who kind of makes it his mission to protect that area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's wonders to behold up there, Echo Rock, and on the Hukuiku Trail, Jiffa, you know, and all kinds of places to hike.
For a year, friends of mine were lookouts on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So when the circumambulators came by, we were invited in for tea.
Up at the lookout station at the top of East Peak.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's convenient. Well, I'm going to pause us here for a moment. 1 second. I'm not feeling very well from my migraine. I think I'm going to have a stop here.
Okay.
Could we restart? I'll pause this and I can come back and we can talk a little more about this.
I don't know that I have much more to say.
Okay, well, we could... I think this is wonderful, by the way, about the mountain, everything you're saying. That's a wonderful suggestion about over at Fern, at Canyon. You know what? I have to tell you what, I finally couldn't take it anymore. I'm always picking up the litter up at the end towards where the fire road at the end. Because they always have those cans, the garbage cans there have no tops on them. So I always go and pick up litter. I finally couldn't take it anymore. I called the city and I said, you've just got to stop this. You are creating the litter. If you have people go put garbage in with no tops, you are just, it's a grocery store for animals in the wind. Now, please put a proper animal-proof, wind-proof canister up there. And they did.
Huh.
It's beautiful. It's green. They painted it green. Mm. And the litter isn't getting distributed anymore. Thank God. 20 years I've been picking up that litter. Finally. And without complaint, you know. Finally, I just thought, this is nuts. Mm. Just nuts. So, I don't know if you've been up there, but check it out. I call them Big Greener. Okay, so well then, if we just start up again, I'm going to say thank you very much for the interview. And it's been a delight to talk to you. And we can, I think, with what you know, take a walk is a good way to end it. Is unless, I'll ask one more question, okay? Okay, Matthew. Well, Matthew, as we're winding up our interview here, is there a question here that I haven't asked that you'd wish I'd asked?
I think we've covered pretty much. I guess you could ask if I ever, what would make me leave, like Peter Coyote has just announced he's going to move to Sonoma, and the traffic is bad. There's no doubt about it, but when you're so rooted to a place with a house you've made and a garden you've created, and you know, a neighborhood of people that know you, it's very hard to think of leaving. I just hope new people that live here can gradually be seduced by the peacefulness of the place and live accordingly.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for your time.
You're welcome. You're feeling the discomfort from a headache.
Yeah.
I'm having more and more shoulder ache, I don't know.
I've got my shoulders here hurting here too. You know, I swear. Do you think, well, I have a friend who says that when you're out in nature all the time, your pores open up. And your sensitivity to things, you become more sensitive to things. Sometimes I think, I have spent so much time on that mountain, I can't tell you. Every day for years. You know, by myself a lot of the time. And it's very hard to go from that into the world at large. Because there's sensitivity and empathy and the way you, the nature opens you up.
Mm.
And then to transfer from that word into the jarring modern world is always a challenge, I think. But, you okay?
Yeah, it'll dissipate, I think.
It's really...